Welcome back. This is St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. When trumpeter Clark Terry, a St. Louis native, passed away in February of last year at the age of 94, he left behind a tremendous legacy, having strongly influenced jazz music and jazz education, as well as countless musicians. To honor that legacy, trumpeter Byron Stripling will join the Jazz St. Louis Big Band in a tribute to Clark Terry in performances tonight and tomorrow night at Jazz at the Bistro. St. Louis on the Air contributor Steve Potter sat down with Stripling and began by asking him to remember the last time he saw his mentor and friend.
Oh, it'd been a while. Like a lot of people, I communicated with Clark via postcard, letters, and phone. And one of the great things that Clark did to me as a kid was I wrote him a letter. There was a jazz book that I'd read, and I wrote him a letter unsolicited. I was nobody. And I asked him a question about how to play trumpet, and I asked him if he would send me a picture of himself with an autograph, and he sent four pictures. I still have those pictures, and I still have those letters and postcards, and so those are treasures to me, which will stay with me to the day I die.
Was he a famous guy then? I mean, was he on The Tonight Show when you did that?
Or? Yeah, this was after The Tonight Show when he had become sort of a world-renowned soloist.
You said you wrote him a letter. And, of course, Clark Terry was from St. Louis. You lived here a little while when you were growing up, but you never met him here, did you?
I never met him here. So, and this is the key important part of Clark Terry. I met him when he was playing with a university band. And one of the interesting things about his career is one night he'd be playing with Oscar Peterson and Ray Brown and Monty Alexander, and these are, you know, huge names in jazz. And the next night he might be with a high school band. And these are people who, in a normal situation, they're just showing up because their kids play in the band. And they don't necessarily know the name Clark Terry. I mean, it wasn't like he was Bruce Springsteen or somebody. It was this jazz guy named Clark Terry who they might have heard of. He would go to these schools and spend his time with these kids, teaching them, doing these kinds of things for them. And by the end of it, you were totally enamored with this guy who had this ebullient personality you were drawn to, because there was almost like a force that drew you to Clark Terry because of this contagious enthusiasm he had, which came through in his playing, but also in his playing and also in his being. His aura radiated with the feeling and the sound of jazz. So at the end of that concert, not only would he spend more time talking to each kid, but there'd usually be a line waiting for autographs. And he would greet and speak to everybody and give autographs to the very end. Here's the key part of that interaction. As he started working with schools, and he was sort of the beginning of what jazz education was all about. So he started working with these schools in like the late 60s and really hit it from the 70s through the 80s. Some of the places that he went, they had no knowledge of and maybe had never seen a black man. The best way to heal people, in my opinion, is through music, to heal and bring people together through music. One of the things the great William James of Harvard said is, I sing not because I'm happy, but I'm happy because I sing. And we all got happiness from Clark Terry through the way he played his instrument and through how he sang and did all that kind of stuff. As a result of a performance with him, people received and got happiness. So he was maybe in his own way a civil rights activist by being a jazz musician who went into schools in this way, because after an interaction with Clark Terry, you fell in love with him, and you may have, the day before meeting him, crossed the street when you saw a man that looked like him. But after just a meeting with him, you fell in love with him. So this went beyond music.
Well, of course, you've been in town a few days now before your performances, and you've been working with young people. Is part of the reason that you do that because of the model that you witnessed through him?
Yeah, certainly. And I think the race thing has healed in a lot of different ways, and people have the internet and television so that they can see. So that's less of a race issue for me than a way to pass on things that I've learned and sort of continue the love, basically, of jazz. Because if you think about it, when do people get to hear and see jazz if they are simply browsing the internet? Used to be we had Johnny Carson, who we spoke about a little before, which he loved jazz. He was a jazz fan.
Right.
And so he made it his mission that I'd see Pete Fountain and obviously Doc Severinsen nightly, and I'd see jazz musicians all the time on The Tonight Show. People don't have that ability now. So I think what Jazz St. Louis provides, what I try to provide, is the exposure to jazz.
Well, you brought your instrument with you today. Would you share something with us, maybe something that reminds you of Clark Terry or that means something to you?
Sure.
Would you want to tell us what it is first?
I'll play a little bit of Misty. That was Clark, one of Clark Terry's favorite tunes, written by Errol Gardner. And we'll just play a little bit of Misty. I always think of Clark when I hear that song.
A tribute to Clark Terry featuring Byron Stripling will be at Jazz at the Bistro tonight and tomorrow night, along with the Jazz St. Louis Big Band. Why do you think Clark Terry liked that particular song so much, or what does it mean to you as well?
Well, I mean, I think it has a – Clark always had this warm, if you could put it in visual terms, like a velvety sound. It was lush and buttery. And I think he used to seek out songs where he could use those attributes of his playing. And, of course, Errol Gardner, the great pianist, was a great composer. And so, you know, there's a great album you should all get called Clark Terry with Strings. It's with a German thing. And it's all ballads like that. And he constantly looked for vehicles like that to feature himself.
Well, your tribute tonight and tomorrow night is going to feature the music of Count Basie as well as Duke Ellington. Clark played in both orchestras, and you did also in the Basie Orchestra, didn't you?
Yeah, I played with the Basie Band. And I think it's interesting to note that there are very few people who were members of both Ellington and the Basie Bands. And so that's one thing that we highlight in our tribute to him, because in the case of Count Basie, I think Clark learned so many great things from Count Basie. He used to call Basie Holy, H-O-L-Y. And Holy was that name was reserved only for the people that you were most grateful for in your life. And in terms of Duke Ellington, that was really, like he always said, I got my degree from the University of Ellingtonia. That experience to him was valuable to watch the leadership ability of Duke Ellington, but also the artistic musical ability. So those were his main teachers. You know, we have universities these days, but really I think those were his two universities.
Well, Byron, you told the story earlier about writing him a letter when you were a little kid, and he wrote you back and you treasured that. But you've called him your mentor. So how did that relationship eventually begin?
So I had seen him actually in Minnesota the very first time I saw him live. I asked my dad to take me to him, and he was playing. Remember, we've talked about this already. He was playing in a park with a college band. So I asked my dad, could you – my dad's like, man, this is the only Saturday I have. I'll drop you off, you know. So I took every Clark Terry record I had. And he was sitting on the edge of the stage, and I just stood by the stage, and I just looked at him because I was too scared to talk to him. Mm-hmm. But this is the beauty of that kind of situation. He then saw my fear, and he said, hello, young man. Why don't you come up here, you know? And so this ability to invite people in is also very similar to what he does musically. That his music, you don't have to be a jazz fan. I think that's really important with Clark Terry. You don't have to be a jazz fan to like and to love his music, because it invites you into it. It's filled with virtuosity that's akin to Heifetz, but it also has the bluesy moan of a John Lee Hooker. Mm-hmm. This is the contrast that he can provide. And you are invited in with not only that virtuosic sense and that sort of bluesy sense, but you're also invited in with humor. And he brings all of that to you.
And you weren't the only young person that he influenced who went on to do great things themselves. There's Miles Davis, Quincy Jones, probably a lot of names.
Yeah,
on top of that,
certainly in present day, the great Diane Reeves. But I don't know of a musician that hasn't been touched by Clark Terry directly or indirectly through his music. It's just that is so powerful. And I think, and I want to let you know, it's important for me to mention, is that actually that ends up being he was one of the innovators in trumpet and one of the people that wrote the rules on how to play jazz trumpet. That's important enough, and we could stop and put a period right there. But actually, we get an exclamation point, and that's in the fact that Clark Terry, his lasting legacy will be his effect upon people through education. I think Jazz St. Louis does a similar thing, actually, because, you know, every performer that comes through Jazz St. Louis also goes into a school and works with kids.
Right. So, which is what you're doing here, too.
And I'll be doing it, too, yeah, all week here. And so think about that. I mean, you could have stopped your legacy one way, but you actually extend it so much further through education.
You're currently the artistic director for the Columbus Jazz Orchestra, and I think you're playing a commissioned work in honor of Mr. Terry?
So what we did in Columbus is, you know, and Clark Terry's death affected everybody so much. And one of the first things that I said that we had to do was to do a suite in tribute to Clark Terry. And I think we're one of the first people to actually do that. So I got three amazing composers to put together an original work. Jazz moves on when original work is done, too. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to look back and just play a bunch of old Clark Terry songs, which, you know, we will do. What I wanted to do is do something new that really put Clark in the spotlight. So we'll also do that here on Friday and Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Let's sample something that you have done with the North Texas State Jazz Band, Tiger Rag. What would you like to tell us of that?
So Tiger Rag, and there's Clark Terryisms throughout this because the way I bend notes and the way it's very influenced by Clark, made popular originally by the original Dixieland Jazz Band, but people like Louis Armstrong and the great New Orleans musicians took this song up and they did it in their own way. This is an arrangement by the great John Clayton, and it's a big band version with me soloing on Tiger Rag.
And Byron Stripling, I loved how the audience reacts through that.
Well, you know, you try to bring them in. That's the lesson I learned from Clark. Try to bring them into the music.
In his autobiography, Mr. Terry was quoted as saying something like that he loved the trumpet because it was loud and it led the melody. Can you relate to that?
Absolutely. Well, when you go up to heaven and you enter the pearly gates, there's not going to be a flute player standing there. Not going to be an oboe player. We're told that Gabriel's going to be there playing his trumpet. So us trumpet players have an arrogance about that. And we command the band. If you get in any musical setting, the trumpet takes the lead. They're the lead voice.
Mm-hmm. And do we love the trumpet around the world? I know in a couple of months, I think you're off to Cuba, I think, for the first time for a performance.
Yep. You know, we've got to take it everywhere we can. And so I'll be playing with, I think it's the Cuban National Orchestra there. Yeah.
I heard that maybe you're interested in looking at the cars and the architecture.
I want to do the cars, the architecture. I am not a cigar smoker, but I have so many friends that smoke cigars that I have a list of the cigars I have to get from.
I see. You
from
can bring some back, huh?
Yes.
Let me ask you this last thing. Clark Terry died a year ago after something like a 70-year career. Since he passed away, what are some of the things about him that you think about, that you think that he's contributed not only to St. Louis, but to jazz, to music, to culture?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, as I said before, the lasting thing that's bigger than anything is your impact upon people. Life is really about your interactions with people. But if I can turn to the artistic part of it for a second, and that's also lasting, and thankfully, he left us a legacy of recordings that are always there for us to tap into and to listen to. One of the things when you work with young people is to let them realize that if you haven't heard some music, that means it's new music to you. And I want all the young people to experience Clark Terry with new ears. And what they will discover is this is a man who wrote the rules on how to play jazz trumpet. He was one of the few. It's got to be Louis Armstrong, Dizzy Gillespie, Clark Terry, Miles Davis, and a few others. And without the legacy of him, and that legacy really was making the trumpet and the flugelhorn a vocal instrument where he felt like he was talking, but not just talking in any old way. He felt like he was talking to you through that horn. And that is the goal of music. And as I said before, he could give us these feelings through his instrument. We could feel, we could get the chills, we could give the love, we could get the happiness, we could get the humor. He could talk to us. And I think that that's the lasting legacy that will stay with us forever.
Do you miss him?
Of course I miss him, and I think of him every day because, you know, I have my own father that birthed me, but then I also have my musical fathers, and he's certainly one of them. He gave me my first jobs with Woody Herman and Count Basie, and he told people about me. I am always indebted to him, and I think of him daily.
Let's go out with this, The Sunny Side of the Street. This is Byron Stripling with the North Texas State Jazz Band. Thank you so much.
Thanks
today.
For having me.
Your hat, baby. Leave your worries on the doorstep. Just direct your feet on the sunny side of the street. Now, can you hear the pitter and the patter? The happy tune is your step. Now, life could be so sweet on the sunny side of the street. Now I used to walk in the shade with those blues on parade, but now I'm not afraid. My rover, cross over. Now if I never had one cent, I'd be rich as Neil Slater, with gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of the street.
That was Byron Stripling's Sunny Side of the Street. Byron Stripling will join the Jazz St. Louis Big Band in a tribute to Clark Terry in sets tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 and 9:30 at Jazz at the Bistro. More information is available on our website at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. And now Nancy Kranzberg offers these thoughts on the role of light in art.
The title of an exhibition of Tala Madani's work at the Contemporary Art Museum in St. Louis, better known as CAM, is First Light. Many of the paintings feature the presence of illumination, for example, from the beam of a car headlight or a flashlight. Madani's subjects interrogate both themselves and each other in search of larger truths. This notion of projection connects her work not only to cinema and its presentation of images through light, but also to art history and the tradition of chiaroscuro, or the contrast of light and dark. Light has been the subject and involved in art and literature forever, and of course innumerable songs deal with light, such as I'm Beginning to See the Light, You Light Up My Life, Shine a Little Light on Me, and phrase after phrase talks of light. She's beginning to see the light. He can now see the light at the end of the tunnel. Let's shine a little light on the subject. It's lighting the way, and he's beginning to see the light of day. There's even an art center on Cherokee called The Luminary. An article on the internet titled Art and Culture says in regards to light in art, paintings and murals in all cultures of the world show how artists have used light and shade and color to illustrate mood and create atmosphere. Modern technological possibilities allow artists to use light in new ways in entertainment and performance, and large-scale lighting installations can dramatically highlight the beauty of architecture. The article talks of laser light shows and points out that stained glass is one of the oldest examples of light in art and dates back to the 4th century. Stained glass relies on natural light to illuminate its brilliance in great detail. It goes on to talk about light's role in photography and cinematography, and talks of light's role in theater and dance. In live performances, effective lighting is so important that it typically warrants a working crew, commonly known as lighting technicians. And stage lighting in performance arts pieces not only allows the audience to see what's happening on stage, but can also be used to set the tone, direct focus, or alter one's position in time and space. Internationally known visual artists such as Dan Flavin, James Turrell, and Bruce Nauman have used light as their medium in art since the 1960s, and there are large light festivals and events all over the world. Our own Lantern Festival, Magic Reimagined, held at the Missouri Botanical Garden last summer, thrilled people of all ages. Light art can be sculpture, site-specific light installations using the urban and natural environment, relief, suspended, ground-based, temporary, or permanent. An article by Scott Newfer titled Dark and Light Symbolism in Literature says, darkness and light have been used as symbols in world literature throughout human history. Darkness and light in the classical canon typically represent two opposing forces of nature, whether good or evil, knowledge or ignorance, love and hate, or happiness and despair. In his article, he discusses the religious symbolism of light in both the book of Genesis and light as a symbol of love, as in Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. When Romeo first sees Juliet as the sun itself, as the ultimate source of life. But soft, what light through yonder breaks? It is east, and Juliet is the sun. Light and dark themes continue in contemporary literature. David Grossman, award-winning Israeli writer, in his most recent work, Falling Out of Time, in reference to parents who have lost their children, says, "Want, I want to wake up, to wake out of it, to wake into the light. I want to dip, to bathe my everything in light." And Anthony Doerr's All the Light We Cannot See was on everyone's reading list and still is. So, visit one of our wonderful museums or libraries, or attend a concert, and your life will be enriched and illuminated by all of St. Louis's wonderful cultural and light-filled offerings. I'm Nancy Kranzberg.
Nancy Kranzberg has been involved in the arts community for some 30 years on numerous arts-related boards. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, and Kelly Moffitt, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr, Valita Brown, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Arts and Culture Programming on St. Louis on the Air is funded in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.